The next question was, when you are certified organic and an animal stakes its foot, like hurts its foot, or the vulva gets torn during calving, instead of using penicillin, which would mean the animal can't be sold as organic, what do you do? I would use, and he says, I would use penicillin as a last resort only.
Yep. For any tears or sores or anything, if you've torn a vulva while calving or whatever, then just colloidal silver daily on it. We'll do a fantastic job and clear it up and clean it up very quickly. And with the sore feet, we just use garlic tincture. So garlic tincture works like an antibiotic, if you like. So we use about 10 mil cow for 3 to 5 days, or depending on what her problem is. So, yeah, if she's got something in her foot, you put her foot and clean it.
And we've actually had we've had some success too, just on that issue of wounds, where we had a gaping wound. I actually looked at it and I thought, oh, I think this animal needs to be put down. It was a little boar that we'd just got, and he'd been ripped by a bigger sow. And it was in the abdominal area, and quite a gaping wound. And George said, what can we do? I said, well, I guess what we can do is just seal the wound by putting on some hydrogen peroxide, which he managed to do with a syringe, sort of irrigated it with that, and then later on, once that had been done, then we got some of the quality liquid kelps that are out there and put that on there, so the iodine in the kelp would then act as a bit of a healing agent as well. So, they certainly
worked very well.
Sorry?
The kelp actually go in the wound?
Yeah.
Would the kelp actually go in the wound?
Yes, the liquid kelp. Yeah, I've had instances many years back from a farmer who had a dog that had antibiotics, and the wound just wouldn't heal. He actually had an altercation one night with a fox, and Rob, the owner of the dog, he said, oh, this kelp seems to work lots of other things. He actually tried it on the wound within a few days, the wound was healing. So it's not just a silver bullet magical fix. It's just something else that you can use in your armory of ingredients, if you like, that would work, just like the colloidal silver and the tincture of garlic.
Now, the last question what we've got from Alan Wood is, what is the species of dung beetles you purchased for early autumn? Wendy and Peter, can you answer that question?
I'm pretty sure they were the bison. They're a bigger dung beetle. They're probably about, nearly 10 times the size of the summer dungs. So, and I'm pretty sure it's the bison. I find it off my, in a hurry.
Well, the people can always contact John Fian to ask that question, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's who they came through, and I'm pretty sure it was a bison.
Yeah. Now, if we've got a guest on the line, you can press *7 and have a chat to us and ask us questions. If there are any guests, just press *7 and, well, I know there are guests, but if you want to ask a question, press *7 and get yourself on the line, and we'll answer your question if we can. Of course, we can. In the meantime, we will go on with revealing good information which our Farming Secrets members will benefit from. So, anything else that we haven't? Well, there's a lot of other things we can say. But is there something that comes to mind between us? Well, I'll start the ball rolling. Wendy and Peter, you did mention when it comes to the stock supplement side that you would have a bin of clay. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, we have a cutting in the back track that the cows come up and down only a couple of times a year because it's too steep, but they always stop and eat there. So we figured if they always wanted to eat the clay that was there, we'd bring some home. So we do have one bin with our local clay from over the back, which every now and then they have a lick at. It's not something they do all the time, but every now and then you see one of the girls having a little bit of a lick. So there's always patches,
yeah.
And quite often people tell me about patches of dirt that the cows like to eat or lick as they're going to or from a paddock.
Yeah, the way I brought that up was that clay or bentonite, or in America they've got a very good product called morellonite, which I'm not too sure can never locate here in Australia. So bringing in this sort of an occasional exotic thing, or having it in some sort of unusual product, has a lot of merit, I think. So Gerhard, would you like to sort of, or Wendy and Peter like to sort of make a comment on bringing in other products for stock, for the loose lick stock choice, like loose free choice or self-select stock supplementation?
Yeah, I think anything of a natural variety within that's naturally found in the soil and whatnot, generally if it's ad lib or free access, then the cows aren't going to touch it unless they need it. So, you know, unless it's got sugar or something in it, then the cows, unless they need it, aren't going to touch it anyway. So you can always trial something, and you haven't sort of, unless you're buying in bulk, too much, you haven't really lost anything if they don't give a rat's about it.
Have you found that some of the things that they don't give a rat's about now would be picked up later? Have you found that there's a pattern there maybe as well? Because that's a bit of a trap sometimes. I've had people come back to me saying that, you know, they haven't had the stock touch it for a number of weeks, and then suddenly they turn around and it's all gone, all with various ingredients.
Yeah, well, that's something we just keep our eye on ours and update it every week. So we sort of tend to know what the girls are eating and what they're not, and when their preference is for something. So we just keep an eye on ours every week, and it's updated every week. It's a salt alone. The cows go through a lot of salt for the year, so. It's just something, if you're going to have something like that, then you need to make a day each week that you check on it and look over it.
I'm a big fan of using a soil test as well to see just what minerals are deficient in the soil. And if you wanted to, you could even take a plant test just to see what minerals are likely to be deficient, so that the animals actually would have them available in different forms. And like rock phosphate would be one ingredient that we've tried. It's interesting. They haven't really taken to it very much, our animals, in the time that I've observed them, but that's not to say they wouldn't look at it down the track. Is that something you've tried as well?
Not as a general rule, because quite often you can do a soil analysis and in the same spot do a leaf analysis and have two different results. Something may show it's little or none in the soil and the plant actually has it. So, yeah, it's quite interesting when you get down to Mother Nature, and she'll work out exactly what she wants to put in where she wants to put it. So I just figure if you've got all your bases covered in your mineral shed.
It can be a bit tricky.
Yeah, when we've talked about salt before, you're a bit of a fan of Himalayan salt. Can you give our Farming Secrets members a bit of a rundown on the Himalayan salt and why you use it?
Well, I mean, it does go against the grain for me in as much as an imported item, but having said that, I do know that it's been very beneficial with the animals because of the 80 different trace minerals that it's got in there as well. If we can get some rock salts here in Australia that it goes somewhere near, then I think I'd prefer to use an Australian product. But the whole idea was really to try and, like Peter and Wendy said before, they're trying to minimise the kelp intake a little bit, and that was to make sure that they had access to other minerals from different sources. And again, it's like we were talking about diversity before in the paddock. It's making sure that they've got access to different ingredients that have different minerals. levels that then reduces, you know, anyone being the one that's preferred. The mineral rock salts from the Himalayas are very good. There's no question about that. It's just a question about, you know, how much do you apply and how much do you make available and then see how they respond to it. Just going back to the soil testing aspect that Wendy raised before too, and the plant, the difference between the soil and the plant tissue testing. When I talk about soil testing, I actually talk about total minerals, not just available. Most people don't get totals, they only get availables from the lab, so unless you specifically ask for them. And that gives you an underpinning level of information that says, okay, we do have sufficient phosphorus here, and now how it gets to the plant is another argument, and that's one that is one that's sort of quite vexed, in as much as you've got to work with the biology as well as the nutrients, as well as the physical structure, as well as seasonal effects, and that issue of rain that Wendy raised before too, which is so important as well, and what the plant is then able to extract from the soil. But if it's not there in the first place, which we don't know until we do totals, then there's no chance of actually even getting it. I think we need to be fairly clear about what we're measuring when we do soil tests.
One question I'd ask you, Gerhard, I think, or anyone, or Wendy, Peter, if you're lacking a particular product, like, which is in its, it's quite toxic, whether it's molybdenum or, well, boron's not so toxic, how would you give that, or would, when it comes to a free choice?
I guess for us, copper's in that realm. Copper is quite toxic if taken in too much. And we use the salt as a mop-up for that. So the cows don't tend to touch the copper salt unless they actually want the copper. They'll put their nose in the bin, and if it's got copper in it, they'll go straight to the straight salt. So we sort of observe that all the time. But, yeah, copper is one that is very toxic. If given straight or in the wrong amounts. So, yeah, we use the salt to do that, and the cattle are sensitive enough, and they know what they need, so we find they don't go anywhere near that one unless they actually want copper.
I think I just want to repeat what you just said to make it clear. So you've got the copper and salt mixed up, but you also have salt on its own, is that right?
Oh, definitely. Salt's always on its own in larger quantities. And we only have the two smaller ones of a copper sulfate mix, 10 to 1. So there's no chance of the cows overdosing.
Excellent. I just wanted to repeat that so that people or our farmers didn't just go for a mixed product, and they still have the basic product available as well.
Yes, must always.
Now, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked before. What steps would a conventional farmer take to become organic?
More ones.
All depending more on ones. Actually whether they want to certify or whether they just want to do things more organically. Certification, you'd look at going through one of your certifying bodies and find out exactly what their rules and regulations and standards are, and then work towards gearing the farm up towards those standards. But if you just want to grow things or treat the land a little more organically or kindly, then, yeah, looking at what fertilisers you're putting on and how much and whether you can use something else that will give you the same result that's a more natural product, and using some biology maybe with the products that you use, so if you can extend their benefit but also help the environment. So there are a couple of the things I would suggest.
Why I ask this, because I've had a lot of to do with farmers coming to me at field days and talk to them on the phone, and usually the word, or when you start talking about organics, or you don't even talk about organics, because it's a lot of farmers sort of treat it as areas you just don't go to. That's why I'm sort of bringing it up now, so that you know, people who are a bit scared of organics can sort of see that it's nothing to be really scared of. It's a very practical way of farming. And the next question I'm going to ask, while you might answer that, is I'd like you to elaborate on that to you three people, is do you lose productivity if you do go organically?
It's probably been a bit of a hard one to answer, because we've only been certified for 5 years and we've been in drought for 14. So, yeah, it's been a little bit hard to quantify. But when we first started fertilising using organically based fertilisers, we had no difference in production. Probably in the middle there we had a little bit of a drop, but whether that was drought or whatever, and at the moment we're probably back to about the same production that we were doing previously. So, yeah, how much the drought has played, or how much just our change in management and trying different things, because you do try different things. Don't know. It's not one that's easily quantified on each farm.
Yeah. One advantage I know you have in the organics is how many lactations your cows have. So what's the average lactation on your herd, Wendy and Peter?
Not as high as we'd like to, but all the cows have been organic all their lives, so we'll sort of get a truer indication as time goes on. Our oldest cow at the moment is 14 and a half, and she's still going strong. I guess the average lactation is probably 6, I suppose, would be ballparkish. Haven't actually.
Yeah. Haven't sat down and worked it out, but
that lactation is going to increase as the longer you've been in organics, I guess. Would that be right to say?
Yes. Well, that's what we hope. No, it should, yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on how large your cull load is, doesn't it? It depends on how hard you cull and what your expectations are off your animals.
Yeah, well, that's true.
If you're happy to allow them.
Depends if you're trying to build
your numbers. We found in our herd. Sorry, what was that, Peter?
So depending on whether you're trying to increase the numbers in your herd or as to how heavily you cull and what other problems
with
infertility, so each farm will be different.
But we found when we went onto the farm, we chose not to, or we couldn't afford to actually have this placement stock there, so we ended up inheriting a herd that came with the farm that was at that stage averaging around about 12-year-old. Animals, and cell count was up there a little bit. And then over the next couple of years, we've sort of built the numbers up, and therefore been able to cull a few of the ones that had the higher cell count that we just couldn't do anything with. And that enabled us to bring the herd age back down a little bit by a couple of years. But the animals certainly don't tend to break down quite as much, because they're not usually pushed as hard. And ours particularly aren't. We're not got big animals, they're crossbreeds. We're in the hill country up there where it's cold. They've got to be durable animals, because it costs a bit of money to raise them to their milking age and to keep them going. So to build in a budget of losing 10% of your herd every year sort of seemed a bit strange to me, but that's how some farmers operate. And another cost that sort of, has to be factored in there.
Yep. Well, you're getting close to our time. We'd like to keep this to about an hour. It's a bit easier for us to present this on the CD if we don't go over time. So, Wendy and Peter, would you like to sum up briefly? And Gerhard, do you just follow on that?
No idea, really. No, we enjoy the way we farm. We enjoy the interaction that we have with our animals, which is probably a lot better now than what it used to be. You get to know your animals a lot more individually, and also your farm in general, your pastures. Yeah, what's going on from season to season, you tend to take more notice of. So in that way, we're still learning every season, and every year is totally different to the one before. So, yeah, look, it's a great way to farm, and obviously we must be doing something right if we've got two boys at home on the farm. So that's what we judge it on. And the quality of our produce, when people speak about what we produce, that is what we judge what we're doing on. So I guess that's about where we are.
Fantastic. That sounds really great. Gerhard?
Yeah, if every farm could say that about what they're doing, but unfortunately the conventional farmer's put under a whole different range of pressures that the organic farmer, once he gets there, doesn't have to deal with to the same extent at least. And you know, having your own children staying on the farm and being able to support them off the farm as well is just, isn't that what most farmers would love to do? You know, it's just something that doesn't happen anywhere near as much these days. You know, we're a bit different in our situation. Of course, we came onto the farm fairly late in as much as only a few years ago. Been a steep learning curve for us as well. We certainly still aspire to being organic and have done everything biologically, at least. And the only reason that we're not organic is because we haven't been able to source organic grain. But once we do manage to get organic grain at a reasonable price, in as much as trying to fit in that transition period from being under supervision and then in conversion, so that you can start reaping some of the benefits of the extra costs. So I admire anyone that goes through that, particularly when it's under periods of drought that Wendy was talking about. But at the end of the day, it's about lifestyle and also being able to say that you produce a quality product that the people who are feeding from your efforts are able to be satisfied and know they're going to get some good help.
Well, on that, thanks, Gerhard. Thanks, Wendy and Peter. We've got to wind up now. I would like to wind up now. So I'd like to thank all the people who sent in their questions. I'd like to thank the Farming Secrets members who are online. So thank all your people. Thanks, Wendy and Peter, for the time that you've allocated. I know you've got a busy lives there. And thank you, Gerhard, for coming on the line too. So I'm going to say goodbye, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you,
guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Hugo. Thank you, Peter and Wendy, and talk again soon.